Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What led you to narrowing your focus to, you know, the stories that we tell ourselves?
Well, I actually went to college or university to be a high school history teacher. And so I wanted to teach, right? I had a falling out with the subject matter probably like 2 to 3 weeks before I graduated. I just had this realization, which then occurred multiple times later on in my life, where it all comes in at once and culminates in, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this, you know? And I realized that I didn't want to be the teacher that was just a teacher to have his summers off and to coach high school soccer. You know, like those were my main goals. It wasn't necessarily to teach history or to help the kids or anything like that, but I did want to impart knowledge, but I didn't want to impart knowledge in that way. And so I had fallen in love with strength and conditioning throughout my university years. And that was through practice as well as a ton of study, even though my history or my major was in something else. But I had a minor in education and I was coaching friends in physical fitness and in nutrition and things like that on the side. And I ended up pretty much walking into a job through a serendipitous meeting as a Division I strength and conditioning coach at a university in my hometown. So I worked with football, men's soccer, women's soccer, field hockey, lacrosse, did that for about a year, and I had zero flexibility of time or income. It was like, you know, hey, Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. football group, like guess where I'm at 4:45, right there, not going to the beach, not seeing friends, not doing anything else. I'm, you know, sometimes during the winter, I'd get into the gym and it was dark when I got into the gym, and the gym was underneath the basketball building or the basketball stadium. And then it was dark when I leave, and there were days in a row where I didn't see the sun. And I'm like, dude, I don't live in Alaska or, you know, Scandinavia. Like, this shouldn't be happening to me.
You know? Or Germany.
Or Germany. Right. Yeah. So I left that career seeking flexibility of time and income, and then seeking having a desire to make a little bit more of an impact. And I got into financial planning. Found a great firm, did it the right way, never anticipated leaving that career. I wanted to grow for the next 30 years with my clients. And I had my second kind of download, come to Jesus moment, where I got bit by a spider. It put me in the hospital for like 3 days. And I was hooked up to all these like machines and, you know, like wasn't ever going to die, but was in a situation where they were like trying to figure out what was going on and get the infection down. And, you know, like I was on pain meds and it was my first like actual health scare. Like I'd had injuries and stuff before, but this is the first and knock on wood only health scare that I've ever had. And,
were you aware when the spider bit you, or did it have, like, did you see it happen?
I didn't see it happen, but this was a stage in my life where I was burning the candle at both ends, as they say. I was, you know, up at 5 to go to the gym, shower at the gym, at work at 6:30 a.m. You know, I'm working till 7:30 or 8 p.m., then going to a networking event and having some happy hour beers and then going home and, you know, doing it again. And that was, you know, 6 days a week and coming into the office on Sunday to do paperwork. Like I was just grinding my face off. You know, I was 27 years old, trying to make it, quote unquote. And so because of that, I kept a pillow and blanket in my office and I just sleep on my office floor sometimes. And sometimes just take naps in between stuff. Like, oh, I got 40 minutes. I'm just going to like close my eyes, just pass out instantly, like jerk back awake, you know, when my alarm rang and like go make a coffee and get back to work, you know? And so I'm pretty positive I got bit while I was taking a nap on my office floor.
There's a lot of like metaphor in that, isn't there? The fact you were burning it so at both ends, mm-hmm. to the point where you were sleeping in the office, and then that's potentially where the spider bite happened. It was like this sort of nip in the bud to say, hey man, like perhaps this is, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, it's a random thing, but you could also look at it as like a bit of a wake up call, right?
It absolutely was, and you know, I'm kind of 50-50 on fate and destiny and things like that, but it would be very fateful and destiny-ish. I know that's not a word or a phrase, but for that to be the case, you know.
Yeah, so, that's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm hooked up to this machine, and Saturday night turned to Sunday morning. It's like 1 a.m. Sunday morning. I'm supposed to be released Sunday afternoon. They're like, okay, everything's good. You know, you'll be let out tomorrow. And so I'm like, I have this moment where I'm like, it's 1 a.m. Today's Sunday. That means tomorrow's Monday. Maybe I'll just stay here another day because I didn't want to go back to work. And it was a, you know, like that instant, like, dude, what are you doing? You know? And I spent the whole night basically forecasting my future. And the conclusion that I came to was I'll have a B- life if I keep doing this. Like, yeah, I'll probably retire at 55 as opposed to 65 or 70. It's like, yeah, I'll be, you know, like I've got some flexibility. It was my own firm. Like, it's not like I had a boss, you know, I really didn't have to go to work on Monday, you know, all things considered, but like, I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't want to talk about that stuff anymore. I didn't care about the subject matter. Very similarly to history, it was like a means to an end. Oh, I'm helping people. I get some flexibility. Like that's what mattered. Right. And so I put in my, I wish I could have or would have put in my 2 weeks, but I put in my, like my 3 months, cause I had to wind some things down, and I left November 15th of 2017 to go back to coaching the only thing that I knew, which was fitness and health. And so I had a couple of local in-person outdoor workout stuff. I had a personal training center. I had a nice app. Basically, I did everything that would have been perfect to do during COVID, but I shut it down before COVID happened. You know, it's like working out outside where you got an app with all the stuff, you know? I shut it down because I had an opportunity to move to Mexico to open a health and wellness retreat. This is with a previous business partner. It was 6 hours south of Cancun. It's on the eastern coast of Mexico. It's on the Yucatan Peninsula. And we were literally on like right next to a sacred lagoon. You know, that if you've got the Zoom screen up or you see this little, you know, mute and three bars button in the upper right, it's like that blue, you know, it's like just perfectly blue right next to a sacred Mayan jungle. And I was like playing barefoot football with the Ninos. I was, you know, learning Spanish words. I'm eating coconuts off trees. We put a down payment on this 8-bedroom compound. And that was March 2nd of 2020 that I moved down there. And wow. Timing. Yeah. Terrible timing. You know, 2 weeks later, borders closed. And I had to make a really difficult call that given the information we had at the time and given what we knew then, versus what we know now, it was the right move to pack it up and come back home and, you know, to bail, all things considered. Mm. And so, you know, looking back on it, I can be like, oh, well, you know, that didn't necessarily work out the way that I anticipated, or the world events didn't play out how it was, you know, kind of projected to play out at that time. And I probably could have stayed. But what that led me to was I was sleeping in my business partner's walk-in closet for a month. And his business was renting dorm room furniture to universities. And so we were considered, what was the term that they use? Essential personnel. So we could actually go out and leave. And scrubbing moldy refrigerators and cleaning out moldy, dusty microwaves in a 100-degree warehouse for $3 a fridge. And this was my like humble pie, you know, my third come to Jesus moment of like, you know, and the bag breaker was when he came in, he was like, hey man, you want to learn how to drive a forklift? I was like, absolutely not. Like, this is not what I want to be doing, man. You know, so I reached out to a good friend of mine and a mentor of mine, and he had just started teaching this modality of story work. And so I did, you know, one lesson basically, and I was like, oh my God, this is incredible, you know? And then I started applying it in a couple different areas to a couple different friends. And I realized probably after a couple weeks that like, yo, I'm going to do this for like the duration. Like, this is what I'm here for. This is what I was born for. This is what I was created for. This is so effective. It's the through line between everything else. And now we're talking wellness versus fitness or health. We're talking mentally and emotionally how you feel about yourself and your life situation in any given moment, and how quickly this modality affected that. I was all in from the very beginning, and I made a commitment to do 1,000 of these sessions and then see where I'm at and see what happened. And I'm on 1,150 so far. Mm-hmm. And my next goal is 10,000. So I've got a 20-25 year goal going, and it's what I do full time.
That's awesome, man. Having these conversations, I realize just how we're far more alike than we are different. You know, this moment of, you know, this 20, around 27, this realization that, you know, just constant work and just time being sapped, and getting this grasp of time and knowing that, hey, this isn't what I want to do. But then all these lefts and rights, and then the intervening of, like we've said, like, the timing of stuff that happens on a small and world scale that kind of narrows things down. I really am a fan of like this pivoting, you know, the left and right. And like you say, like doing that work at the end there, the dormitory work is very humbling when you go through, you know, you get your qualifications, you go through all this stuff, and then you go back to doing this very kind of shitty stuff. It's actually very humbling to go back to that. But then after that, to then have this experience with the storytelling aspect is really cool. I'm just wondering, in the early part of your career, when you were actually dealing with the athletes and so on, do you think those early experiences, you were kind of observing in a way anyway what people were telling themselves, and did that all feed all the coaching you'd already done and what you were doing earlier? Did you find that all had led and fed to what ultimately you're doing now?
Great observation. And it's I had so many interpersonal interactions with people just in all of those career moments, you know, minus the month that I'm cleaning, you know, furniture,
in the warehouse, even in those shitty jobs, you get similar exchanges and stuff, but yeah,
And in those shitty jobs, I was the one telling myself those shitty stories and listening to it and hearing it and whatnot, you know. But back in the gym days, of course, I mean, you know, you're a fit guy, you know, I'm sure you've done some weightlifting in some capacity in the past. And it's like, you get under a bar or, you know, pick up a weight, and the first thought is, oh man, this is super heavy. I don't know whether I'm going to get this. Like, well, that doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to get it, but it's going to dictate the outcome, you know, in some capacity versus, you know, I got this, I'm strong, I'm getting better, you know, good things are happening, great things are happening, I can lift this, you know, keep going, you know, whatever those things are, you know. And so I in sport, I absolutely can make the connection between the, you know, mindset, confidence, speech, self-talk. In career, you know, let's talk financially, for example, our financial health is a huge aspect of our mental emotional state. And so people who were in a good financial position versus people who were in a not good financial position, like, those conversations in their heads were totally different. Those conversations outwardly were totally different. The patterns of speech and language were totally different. And a lot of people use patterns of speech that create conflict internally and externally. Whereas what we try to do, or what I try to do as a story work coach, is to help people to understand that, become aware of it, and start to shift or translate, and not German to English, you know, or English to Spanish, but translate, change the words to a type of language that architects the reality that is, one, more accurate, and two, is more desirable. So, no, I can absolutely see those parallels.
Yeah, that the power of words and what we say, it's so revealing to pick up on that stuff and pick up on language and the way things are framed. So what I love about what you're saying is that it's really like a practical framework. There's nothing really airy-fairy about it. It's like, how are you, you know, it's about listening to how somebody's talking about whatever it may be and finding ways to reconstruct that, which in turn obviously sounds like it produces really effective change.
Yeah, and the word practical means, you know, it's in the word. It means to practice, right? You're able to practice it. And that's entirely accurate. You know, we can absolutely practice speaking and thinking in this manner. I would be lying if I said there wasn't a little bit of woo, right? You know, because words in general are magical. You know, the abracadabra, everybody thinks of magic. Like, that word in itself means, with my word I create, or with my word I influence. And we all took spelling in middle school or primary school, right? Elementary school. And spelling is like, you know, how you form words. And the definition of a spell is a word or collection of words of great influence. And so when I speak, when you speak, you know, with my words I create, abracadabra, boom, that's a spell, right? And so we're literally casting spells when we talk, whether we are aware of it or not, you know? So the spell of what I was saying when I was 27 years old, you know, I hate myself. God, I hate myself. I hate my life. I'm working my ass off. Nothing good is happening. I hate this, right? That was on repeat. You know, I very distinctly remember that being on repeat. And that was a particular spell I was telling myself that led to a particular outcome and a particular physiological state. That physiological state being upregulated, stressed, fight, flight, or freeze pretty much 24/7. You know, so a different set of words led to a different set of outcomes and a different set of physiological states, i.e., I love myself, became my mantra and became my affirmation, became my anchor statement. So when I did shit talk myself and I could notice it, then I would pull myself back into, I love myself, I love myself, I love myself, I love myself. And that allowed me to breathe and relax and rest and heal.
That's actually really interesting. I hadn't really thought about the chemical impact on the language we use within ourselves. The fact that it can kick you into that nervous state when you're just beating yourself up. You know, it's words really do have power, like internally and externally. To break that. So how much does you mentioned it just briefly, awareness. How much does awareness play a part in being aware of what we're telling ourselves and what's coming out?
I think it's a huge part. It's the first key step in any change. You know, it's like I could be walking around 300 pounds and like I just don't notice it. I don't care. You know, it doesn't like connect. And then it's like, oh shit. And maybe it's something somebody said. Maybe it's like that certain view in the mirror. Maybe it's, you know, like I'm struggling to take my shirt off and I'm like, oh my God, like I let myself go, you know? And it's that like instant of awareness that can be the catalyst for the change moving forward. And so the way that we become aware of our speech is we take it out of our heads and we write it down. And 99% of my work is done via Zoom and a Google Doc. So when I say write it down in quotes, I'm really meaning most likely like type it out onto the Google Doc, you know, so typing it out, writing it down, those are synonymous. Okay. But, you know, once we take speech or thoughts and put it down on paper, or put it on the computer screen, what we're doing then is we're taking ourselves out of the story. We're removing ourselves from being in the story. And now we're creating distance and space and we're able to observe the story, observe the experience, have a different perspective on what's actually happening. And that can be a catalyst for awareness. A lot of times what I'll do with clients is they'll talk, you know, and this is a big difference between story work and therapy. Therapy is therapeutic, but it is most definitely not therapy. In therapy, you're expressing yourself and really talking. And that's about it, right? And you're being asked questions, and that's great. And it can be very helpful for a, you know, a certain number of people. It also can be, how do I say this? Non-conclusive for a lot of people. It's a lot of like circular, you know, going through stuff over and over again and not really getting anywhere, right? And so what I'll often do when people are telling their story or using certain words is I'll type it out, right? Because the doc is happening at the same time. If you type something and I type something, we can both see it. And then I'll highlight it and say, hey, read that. And they'll read what they just said out loud, and it'll hit them in an entirely different way. First, half the time, they're like, oh my God, I said that. And I'm like, verbatim, you said that. Like, we can go back and review the tape if you wanted to, but that's exactly what you said. You know, and the other half of the time, they're like, whoa, because they're now observing it differently and they're saying it out loud. And that saying it out loud piece is a huge piece, because now they're hearing that it from a different
back
way.
To them. Yeah,
exactly.
No, it's very specific, and you're right. It's like when it's fed back to you, that the realization might be there that wasn't there in the first place. I know.
Now here's the really cool step with that is once they read it out loud, I often have them slow down their pace of speech and read it again. Because what happens when we start to slow it down is different things are going to be highlighted. They're going to start to pull down naturally into that rest and relax state from their fight or flight state, right? And then thus continue to see things from a different way. Because most of the time when I say highlight it and say, hey, read that, they're going to fly through it because they know what they said, or they don't know what they said, and they really don't want to hear it anymore, and they really don't want to focus on it, and it's scary or hurtful or whatever. They just fly through it. So when we slow it down, what that allows us to do again is gain a little bit more control of our breath, gain a little bit more control of our physiology, and again, just provide another entirely different perspective on the words on the screen.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's very cool. Without discrediting therapy as its own thing, and having gone through therapy, you're right. I just that there wasn't so much emphasis on the things that I might have been telling myself on repeat, or that we tell ourselves on repeat. So if we're telling ourselves the same thing over and over and over again, I don't know how change in that way is going to come about. Like you said, the therapy could be more sort of circular and kind of vague in a way, or not vague but actually getting to the core of the self language and what we're saying relative to very specific things. It sounds really powerful.
It often lacks resolution, and that's what I'll hear from people. You know, it lacks resolution. And again, it's been incredibly helpful for a lot of people. I've done therapy myself in the past. I have a ton of respect for that career and profession. Same with counseling, you know, very similar. You know, if, hey, I'm having struggles with my marriage, like marriage counseling, great. Like, yes, please go. Like, if you're listening to this, do not let this prevent you from going to therapy or going to counseling. Like, go talk about the things you're dealing with, you know, and story work takes it a number of steps further that I've found personally and professionally to be very, very, very profoundly helpful.
It's a very progressive. Has it been around this specific, like, call it a, you wouldn't call it a technique, would you, or this specific approach? Has it been, I mean, stories have been around since the history of time, right? But this approach sounds very integrative and very progressive.
Yeah, I'd call it a mythology. Yeah. And it's really a culmination of a bunch of different things, you know, like a lot of things are, you know, there's really nothing new under the sun, all things considered, you know, and it's got roots in cognitive behavioral therapy. It's got roots in neuro-linguistic programming. It's got some, you know, influence from the landmark work, you know, it's a lot of different things come into one. And I think the biggest key that makes this so effective is its emphasis on the actual words we're using versus the story that we're telling, you know. So it's like, how are you can tell the story in the same story, but use different words and you're going to get a different outcome, you know, and then as well as the emphasis on the physiology, which comes in through the breath. So oftentimes right before we actually change the words, we have one more step to pull us into that parasympathetic, where if I'm breathing like this, right? Like I'm going to be upregulated in 30 seconds, no matter what. That sounds like a panic attack. It sounds like the end of a wind sprint. You know, it sounds like my chest is, I'm breathing shallowly into my upper chest cavity. I'm breathing in and out through my mouth. That is an upregulatory breathing pattern, right? Versus where my inhales are shorter than my exhales, AKA my exhales are longer than my inhales, and rhythmically will add that breath in with the exact same story before we change any words. We'll add that in on every punctuation point. So every time you see a period or a question mark or a comma or an exclamation point, we'll add in that breath. And so what that does is it allows our brains to kind of go on autopilot when it comes to our breathing, and it pulls us down into parasympathetic where we can actually heal, where our brains can store files and memories properly, as opposed to just throwing the file and into the back of the cabinet and have it all scatter everywhere. It's where we can process emotions, right? And so I did a session the other day, and I'll ask a question, you know, what is your strongest emotion right now, and rate it on the scale of 1 to 10. And I do that typically 3 times before we start, somewhere in the middle-ish, and then at the end. And this gentleman that I did the session with very, very, very recently, because I still got my piece of paper with the emotions on it here, is he started with 6.5 frustration. So 6.5 out of 10 frustrated. Middle of the session, he was an 8 out of 10 sadness, because we were dealing with something that was very hurtful for him in the past, you know, kind of working through that. And by the end of the session, he was a 10 out of 10 gratitude, because he was able to see things differently. And we were able to make some links where he started being frustrated with his spouse and his romantic partner. You know, he and she were having some stuff go on, right? As it happens, right? And then it moved into 8 out of 10 sadness, because he linked that to a fight that his parents had right before they got divorced when he was 12 years old, and how he had to show up for, you know, his parents in a different capacity, where he had to be the strong one and he wasn't, you know, really able to express himself and to, you know, really be a kid, you know. In his words, he kind of got his childhood robbed from him, you know, because of this experience. And then the 10 out of 10 gratitude was realizing, like, hey, around that time, that's when his relationship with his sister fractured. And the gratitude came with him realizing, like, he's in control of how he responds to the relationship, and he does love his sister tremendously. And if he reached out to her and expressed that and talked to her and made an effort to rebuild the relationship, she would most likely be very receptive to that. And it's on him to make that happen, because that's what he wanted to do, and that's the awareness that he had. And so he was extremely grateful for having that link made. So he started with frustration to spouse, ended with love for sister. And the action step was, when we got off the call, he was going to call his sister. Mm. Like, dude, that's resolution. Like that's, you know, like that's progress.
What a spectrum of emotions to go through there, and it feels like the most progress is made when emotions shift. If he'd come into that session frustrated and walked out confused or frustrated, well, it's kind of a level, it's a plateau, is it? It's like a level thing. Whereas to go through all that and come out and do that at the end, that's true. Because you never would have expected at the start of that session that at the end that was what he was going to take action on.
Correct. I would have never guessed it. Correct.
Yeah. That must be very satisfying for you doing that to see him go through that and what came out in a very short amount of time, probably, you know, relatively. Yeah,
75 minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's profoundly impactful for me personally, and it's why I'm here. Like, I truly believe this is why I'm here. These are the reasons I had these life events happen to me the way that they did, that I could have the empathy and the compassion and the ability to hold space and the ability to shoot people straight and the ability to shut my mouth when I need my mouth shut, you know, and just like understand, you know, people. And I believe it's, again, why I'm on this planet. It's incredibly, incredibly rewarding.
This integrative approach with the breath, it's just so like, just really finding as life goes on, just how key relaxation and breathing is to so many things, like everything. Like you could be talking about what we're talking about now, or you could be talking about performance, and it's just so much. It really comes down to like relaxation and trying to stop the fight or flight and the panic kick in internally. So you say, so that things can process and kind of cook in a more integrative way.
There's a beautiful quote by Viktor Frankl, and he says, in between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response, and in our response lies our growth and our freedom. And so stimulus, what happens to us, in response, like either physiologically or verbally or however, you know, how you react, there's a space. And I like to call it the wedge, right? The wedge. And the idea is to make the wedge as wide as possible. And we do that through physical practices. We do that through, you know, cold baths. We do that through mindfulness. We do that through a lot of different ways. But ultimately, my argument here is that in the wedge, you can always take a breath. You can always take a breath, right? And that breath, if it's, you know, is going to lead you one way versus, again, that deep inhale and that long exhale. Like if you can pull that off and have the awareness to pull that off and to, you know, because our breathing is part of our autonomic nervous system, right? Where it's largely happening in the background. We can take it over just like blinking, right? You know, most of the time when we blink, we're not thinking, oh man, my eyes are dry, I need to blink. You know, but if we say like, hey, I'm going to blink 10 times, like boom, 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 boom. Like I'm doing it right now, you know? And so breathing is the same way. It's just way more important than blinking, you know? And when we take that conscious breath, we then take back control of our response. And I think, you know, hey, spouse says something, it's triggering, you know, back in the day, you'd respond by escalating it even further. You know, it would respond with an anger or another barbed back or, you know, well, you know what, you know, and it like, it just goes up in that way, you know, versus you take the breath, you see what's actually going on. You have the empathy and the compassion. You understand where this might be coming from and you respond in a different way. And it leads again to the growth and the freedom. As Viktor Frankl says, it'll change your entire life, having that awareness and taking that time to take that breath.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're all actually creative, but as an artist myself, I know that internal voice can be particularly brutal. And yes, in the past, artistically and creatively, that level of self-critique, it can be quite stifling. It can stop us even putting the work out there in any. That's how lethal it is. Like it aims to knock it out. Like it can really and personally, it's just I very much worked to keep that relentless critic at bay creatively, and just like get on with it. And now I'm kind of at a stage where I almost ignore, I do have the ability to ignore certain things that are just trying to, you know, when I really question the logic of what I'm telling myself, mm-hmm. I realize it doesn't have legs, but it's taken me a long time to get there. But I guess I'm just, we all have this inner critic in different ways. I'm just thinking artistically, have you worked with artists a lot? Or
I worked with artists, I've worked with some musicians. The gentleman who we talked about, frustration, sadness, gratitude, like he actually is a drummer. You know, and so I used to play bass way back in the day. And so we joked in the beginning, it's like, we're the rhythm section. That's why we get along.
Yeah. Well, I've played drums as well. So
nice. But that self-talk piece, that inner critic, you know, the inner bully, like if there's any video version of this, I've got a beautiful depiction of a dark wolf, light wolf battling, behind me. And I'll share that story because this is the story and place where I start with a lot of my clients, because they come to me with a deep inner critic. And that story of the light wolf and the dark wolf it's an old Native American tale. And the shaman medicine man is telling a story around a campfire. And, you know, he or she says, there's been a great battle that's been waged inside every single one of us since the beginning of time. And it's the battle between the light wolf and the dark wolf. And the dark wolf manifests itself as evil and envy and jealousy and greed and hatred and sadness and anger and rage and depression and anxiety and et cetera, et cetera. And the light wolf manifests itself as love and peace and joy and kindness and altruism and goodness and et cetera, et cetera. And some little brave boy or girl pipes up and asks, which one wins? And the shaman says, the one you feed, the one you feed. And it is a critically important concept to understand that in this legend, in this scenario, the dark wolf talking that shit is not you. It's not the self with a capital S or the soul with a capital S. It's separate from the individual. So when I was saying, I hate myself, I hate myself, I hate my life, I hate my life, that's not coming from me in this context. That's coming from my dark wolf. And so we name the dark wolf. For the record, my dark wolf's name is Stan. Stan's an asshole. Stan used to be more mean and a lot stronger and a lot more scary than he is now, because we can't kill the dark wolf. That's a big kicker. We can't just boom, bang, or, you know, shoot it with a bow and arrow or banish it to the back of the cave, you know, like, no. But what we can do is we can, with treats and with consistency, feed the light wolf and make the light wolf really big and strong and make the dark wolf really small and weak. You know, a lot of your listeners, I imagine, have trained dogs or had dogs in the past. And then if you're training a puppy, you constantly have treats in your pocket, constantly, you know? And so it's like, hey, what's a treat? I love myself. That's a great treat. That might even be a meal. That might be a T-bone, you know? I got this. Treat to the light wolf. You know, I'm getting better. Treat. You know, this is working. Treat, right? It's like, hey, let's feed the light wolf. Mm. Let's understand the dark wolf is not you. It's just part of every human goes through this from the beginning of time to the end of time. And we are in control of how strong we allow that dark wolf to be, or how strong we can make our light wolf. You know, so Daniel, it sounds like you've learned over time to feed your dark wolf less, thus making it weaker, and understand that your light wolf is accessible and able to be made strong through your words. You know, from a different example, Stephen Pressfield, the author, uses the word resistance, mm-hmm. the capital R, you know, and like resistance is the thing that holds us back. It's that dark wolf, and we must not be overcome with resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I was saying. The aims to knock it out, aims to kill.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a beautiful, anecdote, analogy there. It's a tradition on the show to have guests offer some kind of challenge for listeners. So it's pretty cool. Yeah, because by doing this show, it's always been the little things that I've found have, you know, the little daily things, not like, you know, jumping out of planes, but the really small stuff that has had the potential to bring about bigger change. But specific to this story work or just our conversation, is there anything that springs to mind that the listeners might be able to take away and try?
Yeah, I'll give you one of my favorite exercises. So the light wolf, dark wolf is if I gunned ahead, like that's probably my favorite, right? But the very close second is this exercise around identity. Identity. Okay, how do you define yourself? We were not the same person as when we were 7 years old. We're 17, or for me, 27, right? We might not be the same person 7 minutes ago. You know, who knows? Like we can change these things in an instant. And I believe that we're the only ones that can define ourselves. We're the only ones that can sing our own praises other than God. We're the only ones that can truly judge ourselves. And we're the only ones who can tell us who or what we can or can't be. And so identity is critical, critical, right? You identify as a musician, most likely, or as an artist or something along those lines, right? And, you know, I don't identify as a musician. You know, I put down the bass guitar when I was like 15 or 16, you know, and it hasn't been a huge part of my life since then. And so like, that's not a part of my identity. I do identify as an athlete, right? As a soccer player, as a coach, you know, as a brother, et cetera, right? But again, that's on me, right? I make that for me. You make it for you. Listener, you make it for yourself. And so this exercise is a three-part exercise. Grab a sheet of paper or pull up a Google Doc or a Word document, write identity at the top. And then you're going to make three sections. The first section is, who have I been? So we're looking in the past, who have I been? The next section is, who am I now? Who am I now? The third section is, who am I becoming? And I came up with this exercise, I would say, call it a year ago or so. And I was working with a friend of mine who is the only person I know to share my birthday. It's my birthday twin. Yeah. And which is coming up in a couple weeks. I don't know when this is actually going to be recorded or launched or whatever, you know, published. But my birthday is February 16th. And so this girl went to my high school. She was a couple years younger than me. We had a bunch of classes together. She remained a good friend over time. You know, we lived in the same city. I trained her for personal training back in the day, you know, and so we stayed in touch, right? And she reached out around the holidays about a year ago because she had just lost her brother to a homicide, which was very tough on her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously, right? And I knew that back in high school, she had lost her father around that time as well. And so she had been through some things in life, you know, and yet was still very cheery, you know, very loving, very, very strong, et cetera. And we did this exercise, and I'll tell y'all what most often happens is the past is largely negative. You know, I've been this, I've been that, I've been a drunk, I've been a cheater, I've been, you know, yada, yada, yada. Like whatever happened in the past that you're moving away from. The present has some elements of, we'll call it negativity, but it's also largely positive. I would say like a 70-30 blend of, you know, 70 being the positive, 30 being the negative. And the future, the who am I becoming, is almost always 100% positive, right? And mm-hmm. and we're all always changing. I think if you're listening to this show, you're on a path of self-improvement in some capacity. I think a lot of us are on that path, right? And we're aiming to get better, and we will get better. But here's the kicker. So when she wrote this out, had her past, okay, fine. She had her present, okay, fine. And in the who am I becoming, she says, I'm becoming someone who's strong. I'm becoming a woman who's worthy of love. I'm becoming beautiful. You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I sat here and I looked at that and I was like, girl, I've known you for 20 years. Here, read this again. And I just deleted the word becoming mm. in the entire document.
Always been. Yeah.
You know, I am strong. Mm. Facts. I am worthy of love. We all are. Facts. I am beautiful. Facts, right? So, dude, you should have seen her face. It was instant tears pouring down her face, huge smile, because she had never been allowed, or she had never given herself permission to see herself in that light. And to she had probably never said, I'm strong. She probably, never said I'm worthy of love, and in fact thought the opposite, And to be able to see that we are way closer to where we want to go and who we want to be than we think. And there's very often a very clear, distinct line between who you've been and who you are now. And that's the little surprise at the end of that exercise, where it's the realization of, oh, this is actually who I am. Like, and I am powerful, and I do got this, and I am making this happen, and it's boom, those are big old T-bones and ribeyes to your light wolf, right out the gate for folks. So, and that's present day. I think story work was developed for dealing with things in the past, those hurtful, traumatic, even haunting experiences that, we face from our past. But what I've been able to develop is this manner of using it for the present, with identity, with self-talk, with imposter syndrome, things like that, as well as like the most fun stuff is to look at the future. You're like, oh, great. Let's architect what we really want now using strong language and very, very clear future casting exercises and techniques. And so now we know exactly, not only what mountain are we heading up, but which path to take up the mountain. And, with all the info of what it's going to look like at the top, like that's powerful, as opposed to just climbing to climb,
It's very cool. I love the simplicity of the three part, but then it's almost like a reflection on that exercise. So the exercise in itself is really powerful, but then to do a, like a reflection on it and that shift that can come is that's yeah, it's very cool. So where can people find you and your work?
So I'm on Instagram as most of us are these days. I'm on Instagram at daverobinson.coach, daverobinson.coach. My website is workyourstories.com, workyourstories.com. And Daniel, if it's okay with you, I'd love to offer a little something for your listeners, right? So this
Absolutely.
is super cool. I love doing this. It's, I wish more people took me up on it, to be quite honest with you. And what I want to do is one, give a thank you to you for having me on your show. And I'd love to offer you a free session for yourself or a free session to give away to someone close to you, just so you could see story work. If you're like, dude, I want to go through this, or it's like, hey, I know somebody right off the bat that I think could really benefit from this. So you and I will talk after the show and we can link that up if you're open with that. And I'd love to offer three sessions to your listeners. First come, first serve. Right. So whenever this is out, whenever you hear this, if it got published on, January 30th of 2024 and you listen to it in 2026, it might have passed, right? And if you're a diehard, listener of the show, send me a message. Maybe check out the show notes and I'd love to at least offer that to y'all and use that as a means to continue my impact on the world. I believe the impact is the ripples we create and send out into the world. And so that's why I love doing podcasts, because it opens up the amount of people I can talk to. It's why I love working with coaches specifically and working with people in positions of influence, because it opens up the ripples and now we're tossing boulders into the lake as opposed to pebbles. And that really fires me up.
Yeah, that's very, very generous of you. I'm sure people will follow that up. So yeah, appreciate it. No, I really appreciate your time. It's fascinating delving into the origin of like story work or, in such an integrative way. So I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.